You're listening to Catholic Chicago on WNDZ 750 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you programs about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago.
Welcome to our show, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and welcome to the show here on Monday morning, MLK Day. So just as a program note, we are recording this. It's not Monday. It's actually Friday. So we're taping this one. So we're not going to take any phone calls today on AM 750 WNDZ, the Catholic Conference Radio Hour here. So what we're going to do is wish everybody a happy, prosperous MLK holiday here on, this would be what, the 20th, I guess, of January? That's a good guess. And we'll just kind of take it from there. So with us today, we have four guests, and I'll just kind of dive right into these topics. Our first guest, we're going to talk to somebody from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, Julie Rao, talking about civility in public discourse. That would be nice for a change and probably appropriate for the MLK holiday theme. And then we're going to be talking, switching gears a little bit, come back here to Chicago and in Illinois. We're going to have State Rep LaShawn Ford. He's going to be talking to us about a piece of legislation that he is very interested in, basically would end solitary confinement. Third segment of the show at about 11:30, we're going to talk to Marshall Allen. He is a very influential person, good guest. He's going to talk about the current state felony conviction murder laws and the impact it's had on his life. He's got a very compelling story. And then finally, we'll wrap it up at the conclusion of the program talking about something that's been in the news a lot. We're going to talk with Shauna Gate Cruz. She's with the American Cancer Society. We're talking about vaping and what goes on with that and the different laws and proposals that are out there, both at the national level and on the federal level. So without, we hope, further ado, on the phone with us, we have Jill Rao. She's the Director of Education Outreach for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. So Jill, did I get the pronunciation of your last name correct or not?
You did.
Hey.
Good job.
See? And by way of information, Jill went to a very prestigious university in the Midwest, Marquette University. So there you go. You went to Marquette, right?
I did.
Right. I thought so. That's one thing I do remember about our conversation. Jill, thanks for taking some time and joining us this morning. And I know you've been working on this for a while, but if you could just tell us a little bit about the document. I think it's called Civilize It, correct? Dignity beyond the debate. Tell us a little bit about the document and what the intended purpose of it is.
Yeah, so Civilize It, Dignity Beyond the Debate is the name of an initiative that the USCCB has launched during election season. We launched it on November 3rd, 2019, about a year before the presidential elections. And it's an initiative that invites Catholics to model civility, love for neighbor, and respectful dialogue during the 2020 election season. So we are inviting Catholics to pledge to civility, clarity, and compassion. There is an actual pledge form that persons can participate in online, and there's a whole bunch of accompanying resources that can help them as well as they seek to implement civility in their parishes, in their families, in their dioceses, workplaces, wherever they are engaging.
You know, I think this is kind of one of those things where I'm going to go on a limb here, but I don't think there's many Catholics that are I'll term it uncivil in terms of their approach to politics, that kind of thing. I'm sure they're out there. There's probably a few. But I'd assume that what we're trying to do here is introduce like a modeled behavior in terms of when people see that, they'll react to that and hopefully model that good behavior in public dialogue. Is that some of the thinking that went into this in terms of what we're hoping to accomplish?
Right. Yeah. So on the one hand, we do want to try and model the type of behavior that we want to see in public engagement. But there is also a kind of an internal piece of that. It's an invitation, really, for Catholics to examine their own hearts. Maybe their outward words are not, suggesting incivility, but, think, for example, about, what you decide to like or share on social media, or what is your internal conversation that you have in your own heart and mind about people that you disagree with. Would you repeat aloud to Jesus what you think or say about others? Maybe in the privacy of a conversation you're having. Are you truly trying to listen and understand, or do we sort of put those that we see as our opponents in a box and decide that we are not going to engage with them, or that when we engage, it's going to be talking about what they believe and why we disagree, instead of truly trying to encounter and understand?
That's a good point. I just know personally that I'd like to think that, most of the time when you're talking to somebody, even when you disagree with them, I think by and large, for the most part, most of us are civil in that conversation. But I recently, in those conversations, even if you disagree with somebody, I recently, though, made a kind of a commitment sort of in the New Year's to I have shunned Twitter. I just didn't want to do it. I just thought it was too much. And I've changed my opinion about that a little bit, because everybody, a lot of people are on it. A lot of lawmakers are on it. And so I find it helpful to follow people, lawmakers, other interest groups, to hear what they're saying. And it's interesting in that my first couple of weeks in this is, man, Twitter and social media is really brutal. And you talk about engaging people in a civilized way on Twitter and social media is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And to get somebody's attention and you're trying to persuade without getting into the gutter, that's tough.
Right. Yeah. And so social media would be a great example of, how can we really take as our leading approach the dignity of others, even when we absolutely may disagree with their perspectives. I think there's other, very practical avenues that Catholics consider as well. Are people part of like a neighborhood listserv that, can sometimes get a little bit tense and not always use respectful, and how can we be invitational and invite the conversation to always be respectful of others' dignity and presume their good intentions, so that we can actually engage in a conversation and identify what common values may be as a way to really be productive in that engagement, instead of just demonizing the other.
It's funny you mentioned neighborhood listserv, because I just got one recently. I rarely respond to that thing, but legalization of marijuana has come to Illinois, and there was a posting in our little neighborhood thing about it. There was a community forum from people who are influential and, they wanted to answer questions, that kind of thing. And being the brilliant person that I am not, I responded. I was the first one. 2 months later, that conversation is still going on. And it was amazing. And I am new to this. And, it's funny. I'd never heard the term okay boomer until I engaged in this. And everything I tried to say was factual. I tried to stick to facts and personal experience and never go beyond that. But I'm telling you, the names I got called and the things I got called, it was amazing. I was like, okay, this is going to be tough. So perhaps I should look at your materials, because boy, it's tempting. It's really tempting when people start calling you names and they say things about you that are just blatantly untrue and you have no idea what they're talking about. So I've been through that. But it's funny. Like I kind of held my ground and I just didn't want to back off and I just kind of try to keep the dialogue going in a civil way. But you know what's interesting about that? I had a lot of people who sent me personal messages. They didn't do it in the listserv, but they were very complimentary. So I guess what I'm saying is it can be done. It doesn't seem like maybe you're reaching people. That the first temptation is to kind of go into that gutter. But if you can avoid it, I think you do gain respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I find that, and this is reflected in our resources, that one thing that really does help is to try to be able to lay down some groundwork, a framework for how engagement will be, whether it's, on your listserv or in a family conversation or a parish-wide opportunity that you may offer for people to engage civilly. The three kind of points that we're asking people to commit to, if it's okay, I'll just say
please,
a little bit about each one. one.
Yeah, sure.
So the first one is civility, and that really is about recognizing the God-given dignity of those with whom you disagree and committing to treat others with respect no matter how ardently you disagree with them. The second is clarity, and that involves, you know, rooting your own political viewpoints in the gospel and in a well-formed conscience and standing up for your convictions, but doing so in a way that you're also seeking to understand others' experiences and try and work to see where you may have common values that you can build upon for that engagement. Clarity also includes a component of, not being afraid to speak up in an invitation way when you do hear language used that disparages others' dignity. And then finally, the third piece of that is compassion, and that's about encountering others in a way that, again, affirms their God-given dignity and presumes their best intentions instead of jumping to the conclusion of why someone's making that, point or engaging the way they are. And then, trying to listen with empathy, really trying to understand where they're coming from. So, we find that, if we can kind of put those out there and invite people to engage in a way that commits to all three of those, that can, provide a framework for people to come together and have conversations in a different way than may otherwise be possible.
I think I read somewhere that this was modeled after something in Ohio, in Cincinnati. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So the last couple of presidential election cycles, the Archdiocese of Cincinnati under Archbishop Schnur did this campaign by the very same name, Civilize It, Dignity Beyond the Debate, and it received a lot of attention. It was really a wonderful effort to call Catholics to love and respect others in the model of Jesus. And so we thought, wow, this is great. We connected with the folks in the Archdiocese and said, hey, how would you feel about, us inviting individuals to institutions to be part of this nationally? They were very excited by that. So we have been collaborating with them since the start and, have actually utilized and expanded upon many of the wonderful materials they originally put together.
If people want to find out more about it, how do they do that?
Sure. They can go to civilizeit.org. That website has the pledge right on the front there, as well as links to other materials. We have items like an examination of conscience, a bulletin insert, a pastoral aid, reflections that really are applicable for individual use, for family use, for parishes, schools, and other institutions. We're trying to really just resource that so that folks can really do some good reflection on how this call to civility applies to them and then can really act in ways that can model that and invite others to do the same.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially, as we model behavior, children perceive that, they see that, and so hopefully this will help. And I didn't think of the connection, obviously, to social media, and I think that's important because, once again, a lot of kids are on that, and that's where I think you pick up a lot of these uncivil behavior, and so hopefully this will help address some of that. Jill, thanks for taking some time this morning. Very interesting, very informative, and so just if anybody wants to access that information, it's www.civilizeit.org, correct?
Yes, it is. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This is Bob Gilligan with the Catholic Conference. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go away, everybody. We're going to be right back with our next guest is a state representative from the West Side, LaShawn Ford, talking to us about his desire to eliminate solitary confinement in the state of Illinois. Don't go away, everybody. We'll be right back.
Catholic Charities invites you to a fabulous evening for a great cause on Friday, February 7th at the 2020 First Look for Charity. This black tie event features live music, gourmet food, cocktails, and an all-access exclusive preview of the Chicago Auto Show, the largest in the nation. Car enthusiasts also get a chance to win a new Ford Explorer just by attending. Join us for this night of elegance and fun. Catholic Charities is one of 18 nonprofit organizations that benefit from the proceeds of First Look for Charity. When you purchase tickets and select Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Chicago as your charity of choice, you'll be supporting programs that provide critical help to people in need. That's First Look for Charity on February 7th. For more information, call 312-948-6797 or visit CatholicCharities.net. That's 312-948-6797 or visit CatholicCharities.net.
Did you know you could meet your goal of running a marathon and growing in your faith at the same time? Hi, I'm Sister Stephanie of the Mission of Our Lady of the Angels here in Chicago. Our mission has valuable guaranteed entries to the 2020 Bank of America Chicago Marathon. We'll get you training help, a race weekend support crew, and much more. And by joining Team OLA, you can help support the Mission of Our Lady of the Angels as we provide a Catholic presence and very needed outreach to the poor on Chicago's west side. So run with me and the rest of Team OLA in the 2020 Chicago Marathon. We also will have a team in the Bank of America Shamrock Shuffle this coming spring. Visit missionola.com for more information or call 773-486-8431. That's missionola.com or call 773-486-8431. Thanks and God bless.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. And once again, happy MLK Day to everybody. I think it's a good day to sort of reflect on what his life meant, the values he was trying to communicate to the rest of us in terms of nonviolence and social change. And this topic, it kind of dovetails into that a little bit, as did the first topic, I suppose. We are really lucky this morning. We are joined in studio with us is the state rep. He is from the west side of Chicago. And I think you have, do you have Oak Park?
I do.
You do have Oak Park.
Yep.
Well, that kind of area. Mm-hmm. State Representative LaShawn Ford. Representative Ford, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's amazing to see you in this capacity. I always see you fighting for the principles of the church in Springfield.
Yeah,
so
we do it all.
Good to see you.
Right, we do it all. Yeah, this is actually easier. It's a lot easier.
Yeah. You got one
exactly,
to deal with.
Right, not 100 and whatever
right.
There is. Yeah. You have been in your – how long have you been in now?
You know, in January it will be 14 years.
Wow, you're counting by twos.
Yes, that's right. Right.
You've been there 14
years.
That's hard to
believe. Almost 7 terms,
wow.
Yeah.
Actually, I remember when you came. I came right before you.
I had hair.
Yeah, I did
no
too.
No gray.
I did too. I did too. So you've been around a while. You kind of know the ropes a little bit now as much as anybody
yeah.
can about what happens
yeah.
down there. And you've been pretty outspoken in your career about criminal justice reform and what happens to people when they're incarcerated and trying to help those who want to help themselves get out and get onto the straight path. I know you've had a couple issues like that in your career here, but this is a little different. It fits into that genre, but it talks about, what is it, House Bill 182. I think what we're trying to do is prohibit something I think that most people know about, solitary confinement.
Right.
And I think to the average person out there, they probably think, well, yeah, you know, bad guy, did something wrong, probably dangerous. What is it? Put him
in a hole.
Yeah, put him in the hole, throw away the key, let him sit there. But that's got some problems with that. Tell me what you're trying to do and how did you get involved with this issue
yeah.
per se?
Well, first I want to say it is a true honor to be on the Catholic radio. And so I really, really
yeah.
appreciate
you're
the
welcome.
Opportunity
yeah.
to be on the Catholic radio as a Catholic. And I know that the church and I have had our disagreements on
oh, yeah.
policy in Springfield, and it's good that we could put those aside and talk about
sure.
things that yeah. I believe that is important for pro-life issues like House Bill 182. And this bill came to me from Uptown Law. Uptown
it.
Law, Alan
yeah.
Mills and
yep.
his organization over there, they're just, I think that they're thorough and that they are relentless, and they're working very hard bringing the people together around this issue that have experienced it. And that's
yeah.
critical when you have issues that's in Springfield and you don't have people that have lived experiences advocating for it, it's very difficult.
Sure.
But Alan Mills, he's brought people that have lived experiences to Springfield to talk about the challenges of what solitary confinement is.
Why should we eliminate solitary confinement?
It's inhumane. You know, there was a story that the Tribune did in 2019 about a guy named Anthony Gay. He was in solitary confinement he went to jail just for he got convicted of a robbery and a brawl with a teenager, and he took someone's cap. But he ended up being in solitary confinement for years. And he would talk about how it just deteriorated him mentally. And he would have to do things to himself to self-mutilate just so that he could get some physical touch and to be around human beings. And I've heard stories at Uptown Law about people being in rooms with no windows.
Right. That's what
the size of a bathroom.
Right.
And that's inhumane. And you asked the question, why is it bad? The biggest answer to that is not only is it inhumane, but those people that's in solitary confinement, they're going to come home and they're going to be our brothers and sisters and our neighbors.
Right.
And so we still have to deal with the consequences of treating them and deteriorating them mentally.
I think some other states have recently, or they are considering eliminating solitary confinement. I think New York may be one of them. And this is kind of a national trend now as we learn from people who have been in solitary and their experiences. And as you indicated, they get out and the harm it's done to their, not even their, so much their physical capacity to thrive, but it's that emotional and psychological damage that's done. And if our prisons are to serve two functions, to punish, of course, and secondly, to rehabilitate, there's no rehabilitation in somebody that's on solitary confinement.
There's not. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. We have to serve two functions. We have to make sure that people are punished for the crimes that they've done in society, but we also have the responsibility of rehabilitating. That's why it's called the Department of Corrections,
right?
Because we have to deal with it. We don't want them coming back. And if we don't help them during the process, and then I think that we're going to be faced with recidivism and the people are going to continue to create havoc in our streets. So it's our job to have a restorative type program.
Right, right. I think this bill also, I think what they do is it does two things. My recollection is that it prohibits being in solitary for more than 10 consecutive days, and then no more than 10 days in a 180-day time frame. And I think what we have anecdotal information that indicates in our conversations with the Department of Corrections is sometimes they use this as kind of like a punishment almost. And it deprives them from, you know, interaction with other inmates and mealtime, things like that. And so that's not the intended purpose. That shouldn't be.
It's not. But you know what? And that's the way it's used. I don't think that any correctional institution should treat people inhumanely.
Yeah.
And that's what it's doing. It takes them away from the yard. Anytime someone is in solitary confinement for 23 years.
Can you imagine?
That's pretty sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've talked to these people, you've experienced, you've had it. I mean, how does somebody who's been in solitary for that length of time, how do you recover from that? I mean, I don't think I could.
You know, the people that I talk to from Uptown Law, they say they will never be the same.
Yeah,
that their lives are destroyed, and sometimes they just cry, okay, and they have to constantly seek help.
Yeah,
and they don't trust themselves.
Yeah,
and so we have to help them.
How is your? I know there's, you know, there's a lot of bills out there, and this bill has been out there for a while, and it takes a little bit of time, I think, to build support for something like this. But is there any? Is there any hope in terms of conversations with your colleagues and how that's going, or are we just still on the education aspect of this?
I think there's more hope because recently Oprah Winfrey, President Obama, they all came out against solitary confinement.
Oh, I remember.
So that's a national move. And when we have people like President Obama and Oprah Winfrey saying that this is inhumane and that, you know, we can no longer do this to individuals, I think that helps move the needle. But I think that we have done a great deal with you down in Springfield and Uptown Law and other people that believe in making sure that people are treated humanely, keeping it on the forefront of the Department of Corrections, letting them know that we recognize that change is necessary.
Yeah. And you've talked to the department, I assume, about this. And so far, it sounds to me like they want to keep it.
They do. They want to keep it. They believe that it's safer for the guards. Mm-hmm. They believe that the people that they put in segregation now, they say that we no longer have solitary confinement. We have segregation.
I've heard that. Right.
But we do have solitary confinement, whether you want to change the name and have some synonym. It's solitary confinement where people don't have interactions with others. And there are some people that also say that people that feel threatened by their peers in jail want to be in solitary confinement or segregation because they fear for their life. So what we have to do is make sure that the prisons, no matter what a person has done, that the prisons are safe and that people are being rehabilitated. So they would say that if there are gang fights, a person will do something just to be thrown in solitary confinement to protect himself from
from an aggressor or something.
Yes.
Wow. Is there do they use this in every prison in Illinois? Do you know? Is this standard procedure, or is it just in some of them? Or
no, they have them in all prisons.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That you and you know, here's one of the things that we have. Opposition is with the unions.
Uh-huh.
Ask me.
Yeah.
Ask me as opposed because they have to protect the safety of the guards. That's the union that they're in. And so until the governor and the department figure out ways to make our prisons safe from any type of violence from people and put them in situations. I mean, you can put people in a single cell with a window.
Yeah,
you could
right.
put people in a situation where they could
They're
still
never
interact.
Get out.
Yes, so
and they could have some interaction.
Yeah.
With somebody in a cell across the way.
This guy that they interviewed, the Tribune interviewed Anthony Gay. He said that he would just mutilate himself just so that he could go and sit with a nurse, so that he could get some
contact.
Physical contact.
Really?
Yes,
wow.
And just to have some touch. And conversation with her made him feel better and made him feel human.
You're not advocating that these individuals be free to roam. There are people in jail that are dangerous.
Yes.
We all know that. And we recognize that. And we're not advocating that they endanger other people. But that doesn't require them to be put in solitary, like you said, in a place where there's no windows.
Right.
It's dark, all alone. There's other ways to make sure that they are not harming others, yet at the same time, still maintaining their human dignity. That's kind of what
that's
you're
exactly
saying.
Bob. Right. And
right.
and what whether we're pass whether the bill passes now, the conversation is gone, and
that's
we're
right.
going to get there because there are changes, and the department recognized that people like Uptown Law, Alan Mills, and the Catholic Church, and me, we're all wanting humane treatment for people no matter where they're at. One of my favorite quotes by the Pope was that we cannot have a throwaway society.
Right, exactly.
You know.
This is what that says.
That's it.
That's it was in the context of a different context, but he did say that to apply to different situations, and that's exactly what he was saying. That's very true. So where do we go from here? The bill's out there. It had a public hearing, I think, at some point in time.
It's in rules, and we made the request for this bill to be out of rules for the January session, and the conversation continues. And everyone, and you know that you have legislation and things improve just from having the discussion.
Absolutely. This is one of those topics.
Yes.
It's not going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
It's going to take some time. But I think with a general education campaign, you're right, more talking about it, the more people are exposed to just what happens in solitary, it'll make them more uncomfortable. And I think that eventually perhaps the governor's office will move and we can satisfy maybe some of AFSCME's concerns.
Yeah. And for the Catholic Radio and all your listeners, I just want to say this is a real pro-life issue.
Yeah,
and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak on it.
Yeah, it really addresses, we have a whole group of people that are involved in prison ministry. And I got to tell you, I can't do what they do. They go into the jails. They talk to these people. They're their friends. They help them. Mm-hmm. And boy, that is really a unique person.
No, Bob, you could do it. You. I mean, you do it all the time. Yeah. I think that you just worried that they might just keep you there.
Right. Exactly. But it's a tough ministry, and these people are, God bless them, because they're wonderful people. They're strong advocates for those who are incarcerated, and mm-hmm. and they, you know, it's one of the Beatitudes, right? You know, visiting the prisoner, in prison. Representative Ford, thanks so much for coming in. We got to run, so it's House Bill 182.
182.
And we'll keep people informed of what's going on, and hopefully we'll have a little bit of progress in this. We'll just keep it going.
All right, thank you so much
for coming in.
All right.
LaShawn Ford from the West Side, thanks for coming in. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Marshall Allen about House Bill 1615. It has to do with felony murder convictions. We'll go into more of the details later. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Charities has been working to improve lives and communities for more than 100 years, offering help and hope to people of all races and religions who come to us in need. All are welcome at Catholic Charities as clients, volunteers, donors, and advocates. Catholic Charities is the social service arm of the Catholic Church and the largest Midwest provider of programs and services that strengthen individuals, families, and communities. With support from donors and partners, we provide meals, clothing, housing, counseling, education, and job training. We provide these services with competence and compassion. To learn more or to join us as a donor or volunteer, visit CatholicCharities.net.
Are you passionate about helping others? Do you enjoy shopping? Combine both and become a volunteer at Catholic Charities West Region Food Pantry in Cicero. Opportunities are available in weekday, daytime hours for individuals or groups to stock shelves, be personal shoppers, and more. Shifts are flexible, and we would be grateful to work within your schedule. As a food pantry, we rely heavily on volunteers to be able to keep our pantry open to serve our clients. Often the smallest gestures make the biggest difference in the lives of those in need. Gather your family or group of friends and come join our team. See what a positive experience helping at our West Region Food Pantry can be. To sign up, please visit www.ccofchicagovolunteer.com.
Catholic Conference of Illinois, and thanks for listening to our show this morning on Martin Luther King Day, January 20th. As I mentioned earlier, the program is being taped due to the holiday, so we're not taking any phone calls, but nonetheless, we've had some very good conversations, informative as they have been, and I'm sure this next guest will be very informative. He has a fascinating story. His name is Marshawn Allen. Marshawn, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, welcome, and thanks for taking some time to join us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Yeah. So what we're talking about here is a personal story that deals with perhaps a piece of legislation. This came to our attention, and Marshawn, if I get any of my facts incorrect, just jump in. I think there was a fairly well-publicized incident in Waukegan last summer where three or four individuals late at night were out in front of a man's house. They were in process of committing a crime. I think they had stolen a vehicle. They looked like they were going to perhaps rob this individual's house. The man came out and shot one of them. The others fled. And I think one of them may have been killed or injured or whatever. And it brought to light something in Illinois law that is an interesting provision, and what it allows for is for somebody to be charged with a felony if they didn't in fact commit the crime, but they were in some way accompanying the person who had committed the crime, albeit whether they had knowledge of that crime or not. And the particular piece of legislation is House Bill 1615, and it attempts to address that situation. And what we wanted to do today is to talk to Marshawn, because you have a personal experience with this type of law.
Yes, I do.
Tell us your story.
My situation is a little different than the Lake County 5 case, and I do want to point out that they were allegedly trying to steal his vehicle, not break into his house.
Right.
And one of the individuals were actually killed. It was actually six youth that went to the house.
Yeah.
And one of them was killed, and the other five was charged with first-degree murder. My story happened, you're welcome, some time ago in 1992 when I was 15 years old. I had an older brother who, unfortunately, was involved in selling drugs, and he asked me to steal a car to he asked me initially to bring three individuals to his apartment to buy some drugs from him, and we were robbed in the process of that. And my brother wanted to try to get the drugs and money back from him. He tried to call and talk to him and negotiate with them, and when that failed, he decided to send two of his friends to go and take the money and drugs back. And my part was he asked me to steal a car so that they could do that. And I stole the vehicle. I actually accompanied the individuals to the scene of the crime. I didn't go into the apartment. I didn't have a weapon. I didn't harm and kill anyone. But unfortunately, in the process, they shot and killed two individuals inside the apartment. And about 2 weeks later, I found myself being charged with two counts of first-degree murder. Two counts of first-degree felony murder and home invasion under theory of accountability. And what that means is that I was charged because I stole the vehicle that they used to commit the home invasion with. I was accountable for the home invasion for one, because I aided and abetted the home invasion by stealing the vehicle.
Yeah.
And because someone died during the course of that home invasion, in Illinois they call them forcible felonies. If someone dies during the course of a forcible felony, you are can be charged with first-degree murder. And the issue here is that the prosecutors don't, in those situations, a person is charged first-degree murder whether or not they had a weapon, whether or not they harmed or killed anyone, whether or not they had any intent or to kill or knowledge that anyone would be killed. And we've seen that play out in the Lake County case, which is very unfortunate what happened there, where the homeowner actually killed one of the alleged offenders or co-offenders, and they charged the other five offenders with his death.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you when this happened?
I was 15 years old.
Wow. And was this in the Chicagoland area, or was this somewhere else?
Yes, it was located on the southeast side of Chicago.
Wow. And your brother, is he okay?
Well, he was never charged with the incident or arrested, but unfortunately he's deceased now. He crashed on his motorcycle about 5 years after the incident and died. Yeah. Yeah.
You have quite a miraculous story, though. So you did go to jail and serve some time, but you actually, you attained a degree in, was it law enforcement, as a paralegal?
Yes, I went to prison, was convicted of the crime, and went to prison, sentenced to a mandatory life without parole sentence. And my judge didn't want to give me that sentence, but he was mandated by law to impose sentence because of the law at the time. And while I was there, I just decided that, I mean, I don't think I was a bad kid going in. I just grew up in the wrong environment and had some wrong bad influences. But when I got there, I decided that I wanted to... you know, I deserve better than that, and I wanted to better myself. So I used my time to actually learn and to grow and educate myself. And
that's amazing.
Earned a degree in paralegals and associate's degree as well from Lakeland College.
That's fantastic. That's a great story. So what have you been involved with House Bill 1615 at all?
I am. I actually work for the organization that has been educating legislators about it. And the public, we've been doing some education campaign around House Bill 1615.
And I assume the primary opposition is because the prosecutors, the state's attorneys, probably want this tool to use that to leverage confessions or information out of others that may have participated. Is that what they're saying?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it's easier for them to convict someone when they're charged with felony murder because not only is it a bludgeon, as we call it, to get someone to turn states and they can use as evidence and confess the crime, but it also, they use it to, it's easy for them to find people guilty because they don't have to prove that you had any knowledge or intent to kill like you do with the other, with the regular first-degree murder, or intent to kill or knowledge. You have to have those two elements. And with felony murder, all they have to prove is that
you were
part of the initial felony and that someone died in the course of that felony.
Yeah, that's a pretty low bar.
It is.
That's a really
low bar. all of our other criminal laws require you to have some intent. And this is the one law that doesn't require that. And it's really crazy because this is like our state's highest offense, most severe offense, that can send people to prison for the rest of their lives. And it's a low burden for the state to find someone guilty and label you as a murderer.
Yeah. Do you know how often this is utilized? Do you perceive this as something that the state's attorney utilizes frequently? Is that why they're so committed to it?
We think they do use it frequently. We don't know how many people is impacted on it. It'd be hard to get the data.
Yeah, sure.
But we know that they use it quite frequently.
Yeah. You have a very compelling story, and because of your, I would say, rehabilitation and your ability to articulate personally what this is quite compelling. Have you found any change in public attitude since you've been involved with this, or are people pretty entrenched in their beliefs?
No, there has been some change. I think the biggest thing we are finding out now is that a lot of people don't know about it. We're not talking about just regular citizens. We're talking about even legislators not even aware of
really?
It. Or if they're aware, they don't know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So the Lake County 5 case kind of gave people an educational opportunity to learn about this law. And a lot of people were outraged by it.
Yes.
And that's what we're finding out, that they're outraged that someone could be charged with murder under these circumstances.
Marshawn, am I correct in that the state's attorney in Lake County, did he later go back and rescind those charges? Because are they still up for forced felony or not?
No, he did eventually drop the felony murder charges against the youth. It was because of the community came out and called and contacted him, let them know that they did not agree with that decision and trying to encourage him to change the decision.
Right. And that's a rare case because that was so publicized. It was on television after night. And so it got a lot of attention. But I think what I understand your point to be is that, well, look at your case. I don't think it wasn't in the press, I assume. And it was nobody paid attention to it. And how many other people besides you served jail time in that incident that had no knowledge of what was going on?
Exactly. And I know I've met, I don't know the number exactly, but while I was incarcerated, I met numerous people who was charged in this way. They're still sitting in prison today. Some of them sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
And my understanding is the reason that you were able to be released is because of that Supreme Court decision, the Millen versus Alabama, about juveniles being sentenced to life without parole. That's how it was. Your case was reviewed because of that case?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Fascinating. So, Marshawn, where do we go from here? I don't know. I understand you're not the legislator, but what are the prospects of House Bill 1615? And I assume it would do away with this knowledge criteria. Is that the thrust of the bill?
Yes, the current bill, the way it is drafted now, it would do that. It would eliminate the situation that happened in Lake County.
Yeah.
It will also require some level of knowledge and intent on behalf of the offenders. You know, you have to either personally inflict the wound or know that the person who you're with are going to basically commit these acts.
Yeah.
So it does address those situations.
And what is the prospects for the legislation? Do you have any understanding of that in terms of talking to Representative Slaughter?
No, we did have a subject matter hearing a couple of months ago, and the legislators seemed very interested in the law and seemed to think that it needs to be changed. But it's hard to say right now.
Yeah, I understand.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
But we're hopeful. It seemed like it is picking up steam and that people are, and especially more citizens call their representatives and ask them to support the bill.
Good.
The more is more chance of the bill being passed and the laws being changed.
Obviously a grassroots campaign. Marshawn, thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us this morning. You have a fascinating story, and congratulations on what you've been able to do while incarcerated and turning your life around and really, I mean, playing a vital role in this. So it's a great story, and it really is great to hear somebody like yourself articulate and had a tough start, and you overcame a lot, and it's just a great story. So thanks so much for doing what you do.
You're welcome. And again, thank you for having me and allowing me the opportunity to share this with my story with your listeners.
Great. Thanks so much. Marshawn Allen.
All right.
Thanks for everybody for listening to his story. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. Don't go away. We're going to close up the show here in the next couple minutes with about a 15-minute segment from we have a guest from the American Cancer Society, and she's going to join us to talk about vaping and what's going on with that subject, flavored tobacco, vaping, etc. It's Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference. Don't go away.
We invite you to watch Catholic Chicago this weekend, featuring a conversation with Cardinal Blaise Cupich and video highlights from across the Archdiocese. Here's host Todd Williamson.
We'll walk with the participants of the Immigration Posada and hear about the challenges facing immigrants today. We'll show you how high school students devoted their time and talent to a group of military veterans. And you can enjoy the sights and sounds of the City Lights Orchestra performing its first ever Rector's Christmas Concert at Holy Name Cathedral.
Watch Catholic Chicago Friday at 7 p.m. on Chicago Loop Cable, Channel 25, and Sunday afternoon at 3 on the Comcast Network, Channel 100.
Look forward to an afternoon of elegance on Sunday, January 26th, when Catholic Charities hosts A Toast to Charity at the 19th Annual Divine Affair event at the Union League Club of Chicago. Guests will be able to sample from a wide range of premier wines and craft beers from around the world, along with food stations featuring gourmet hors d'oeuvres and desserts. International experts will be on hand to help guests learn how to appreciate and buy the right wine and beer selections for their next gathering. There will be special auctions being offered and fantastic raffle prizes just waiting to be won. Proceeds from this event go to Catholic Charities self-sufficiency programs that provide shelter, clothing, counseling, and other services to families in need as they journey on a path to long-term stability. Come join in the fun for an important cause. To learn more about the Divine Affair, please call 312-655-7907. That's 312-655-7907.
Bob Gilligan, everybody, and thanks for listening to our program today on this MLK Day. No phone calls today, but we've had some really good guests, and I'm sure that trend will continue. Our next guest is with the American Cancer Society. I remember that. And now I got her name in front of me. It's Shauna Cruz. She's the Government Relations Director for the Illinois Chapter of the American Cancer Society, and we're going to be talking about flavored tobacco and vaping. Shauna, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, Bob.
Hey,
thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on. I follow these issues from time to time. I got to tell you, I'm so confused now about vaping and flavored cigarettes and who's banning what and what's going on. I know the FDA came out, the Trump administration, they came out with something. I think the Attorney General came out with something. There's a lot going on in this space. We wanted to have this segment to help explain to people what is the current status of these various provisions and what's the problem we're trying to solve, because my understanding is vaping in and of itself is not necessarily harmful, but there's other additives and other things that go in it that make it harmful. So why don't you give us an outline of what we're looking at here?
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. There's a lot of action around electronic cigarettes right now, from the FDA rule to in the federal appropriation. There's a national Tobacco 21 policy that was passed and implemented back in December,
right,
as well as state actions as well. And from our perspective, we've been concerned about electronic cigarettes for quite some time now. We actually started our effort at the state level back in 2015, before this became the national epidemic that it is, because the trends that we started to see were very troubling. And really seeing how this new tobacco product that came onto the market captured a brand new generation of tobacco users who would have never touched a cigarette are now using electronic cigarettes, and we're actually seeing a shift of them going from electronic cigarettes to cigarettes.
Really? So you think so? Really? Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. Because doesn't the industry say just the opposite?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
This is the exact same playbook that tobacco used, back in the 50s and 60s as
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's kind of interesting to see because they really mirror each other. The tactics, the marketing, the language, the way it's being framed, it's very similar, but we have absolutely no proof or evidence that electronic cigarettes are safe for you. From our perspective, nothing but fresh, clean air in your lungs.
Sure. Right. That's a good point. Yeah, we're talking on the margins here. That's a really good point. So I know, what is the Trump administration, what is their proposal? What are they trying to do?
Yes. So the FDA guidance that came out banned certain it would be the products that look, that are what they call closed systems, where you just insert a pod, you don't pour the liquid into it. But the products that you pour the liquid into the electronic cigarette, none of those flavors are touched. The huge concern that we have with FDA guidance that's come out is really seeing how it puts tobacco interests ahead of our kids. Because mint and menthol are the main flavors kids use. Now, I find unicorn puke, which is an actual flavor that I am not making up, to be an absolutely egregious flavor name that is marketed and out there. But that's not what kids are using. Kids are using mint and menthol in overwhelming majorities. And so any type of policy that doesn't address those flavors is really missing the mark and not addressing the actual.
Menthol was what they put in cigarettes when I was a kid, right?
Absolutely.
I was going to say, I can have vague memories of menthol cigarettes. That was like an attractive, that was a marketing thing, to make cigarettes more palatable, I guess. So your position, the American Cancer Society, as you indicated, anything other than clean air is something that you would oppose. You're opposed to all of these types of new products, including electronic cigarettes, because there's some people out there that will say that vaping in and of itself is not harmful to you. It's just nicotine and it's not tar, if I heard that argument correctly.
Yeah, those claims are definitely put out there. And something that we've worked with the FDA on is you'll hear a lot of companies claim that this is a safe alternative to smoking. And
they're
available to help people quit smoking.
Right,
but
that's
what you hear. But the fact of the matter is not a single one of those companies have ever put their products up for FDA review to become a tobacco cessation product. So if they truly believe that they're a cessation product, from our standpoint, you would think that you would then go through the application process to be deemed that. And if that were, if that's really what your hope is, there are 7 products that are FDA deemed as tobacco cessation currently, from lozenges to patches, different products that you have access to right now. And we have found those to be safe, effective ways to help people quit smoking.
That's a good point. That's interesting because I didn't know, I wasn't aware that, so there's an official process that's out there in order to be deemed a smoking cessation product. And obviously they've not gone through that.
Absolutely, yes.
And so what you hear anecdotal stories about, oh, hey, I tried it and it stopped me from, that's what you hear. That's probably what they're using. Got it. Interesting. Okay. Now, is it the position of the American Cancer Society, you want to ban all electronic cigarettes?
We want to ban, restrict the sales of flavored tobacco products.
Flavored. Okay. Okay.
So the proposal that we've put forth, there's currently a measure in Congress that would ban all the characterizing flavors, and there's also proposals put in at the Illinois legislature as well, so that
menthol, all the mixed liquids would be, you couldn't have any flavors except for the flavor of tobacco.
Is the federal FDA rules, are those in force yet, or were those just announced?
Those were just announced last week or the week before.
That's what I thought.
So they'll be pushed out here shortly.
Were you surprised when those rules came out? Because I recall the president making a comment, or probably a tweet, about how he wanted to ban everything. And then when the rules came out, that was not reflective of what my perception, and it could be entirely wrong, is that I think the president himself was probably reacting something that probably affected him personally, like Barron and his wife or something like that. And then it seemed like he wanted to take a real hard stance against this, but kind of what came out was different. Am I correct? Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
And that's, from our perspective, when we saw the rules come out, we were,
you were disappointed.
Very concerned that, this is really putting the tobacco interest ahead of our kids.
I see.
Because right now, 1 out of 10 middle schoolers are using tobacco products, and 1 out of 4 high school students. So this is we've never seen a substance abuse epidemic come on as quickly and go as sharply as electronic cigarettes.
And do you think it's due in part because of these electronic cigarettes? That's what you're attributing the cost to be that. So I know, it seemed like we had a spike in deaths, quite frankly, due to vaping. And is that gone away? It seems like it has. I haven't heard anything recently, or is it just not in the news as much?
It's one of those things that I think Illinois has had really one of the highest impact states from the electronic cigarette vaping deaths. I don't believe there's been any reported yet for 2020, but it's something that I'm not assuming that it would go away.
Yeah, it just seemed like it was such a story for a while there in the fall and the summer, and it does seem to have sort of fallen off. I don't know if that's attributable to our kids just being more careful, or it's one of those. I don't know. I'm just sort of, it's just an observation. So, Shauna, we got about 2 minutes to go. Where do we go from here? Are you working on legislation in Illinois, or is it mostly the regulatory process?
Absolutely. One thing about the FDA rule that just came out is it did not preempt states from taking a more strong and comprehensive approach. So we would encourage the state legislature to take this issue up and really put forth some comprehensive policy that we know would address this issue. Restricting the sale of all flavors of all products, and from our standpoint, would be just another step. We know from the years and decades of progress that we had been making on the tobacco use is that you can't just do one policy and walk away and say, we fixed it, all done. You have to continue to work and really build comprehensive approaches that attack it from all angles. So we will be working on that this year with Senator Morrison in the Senate and Representative Conroy in the House to address flavored tobacco and really making sure mint and menthol are included, because that's the crux of the issue.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's the attractive part when it gets probably not only gets them started, but probably gets them hooked in terms of the taste and the flavor. That's why they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We always say menthol really masks the flavor to help the poison go down. That's why it was invented and why it was used.
Yeah, that's funny. Shauna, thank you so much. This has been very informative, and I think it clears up a lot of because these stories are coming so fast at us. I don't think sometimes we have a chance to digest them before the next story comes out and the next regulation and the next law attempt. And so I know there's a lot of stories out there, but it's hard to sort of put them all into perspective. And I think you did a really good job of helping us kind of ferret through some of these issues.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Shauna. Thank you so much. And have a great day. And thanks for joining us this morning. So thanks for everybody for listening. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. And our gratitude goes out to our 4 guests, Jill Rau from the USCCB, talking about Civilize It, and Representative Sean Ford, who was kind enough to come in today and talk about solitary confinement and his desire to ban it. And Marshawn Allen with that compelling story about how he reformed his life. life despite being incarcerated for not even participating in a crime or having knowledge of it. And then Shauna Cruz for making some sense out of all these regulations and what's going on with vaping and flavored tobacco in Illinois. Our gratitude goes out to everybody for listening. Have a wonderful Martin Luther King holiday, and we'll be back on the third Monday in the month of February. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Join us every Monday through Friday at this time for Catholic Chicago. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.